What was the feeling when you looked at the eyes?
It was scary.
Scary why? What made it scary?
The eyes looked evil.
Evil? What was evil about them? Say what you mean by evil.
It looked evil because it was just staring at me.
Staring at you as if to do what?
As if it wanted to come and take us.
Welcome to the Oddity Archive with Evan and David. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Oddity Archive. I'm David. Evan, how's life going today?
Life is good. I just had some very delicious tacos, so now I'm fully ready to hear about some paranormal activity.
Excellent, excellent. I have actually a UFO story for you today.
Excellent.
I think something we got to talk about first, though, and we probably should have covered this at a previous time, is where would you say you fall on the Mulder to Scully?
The scale?
Scale, yes.
I guess you mean doubter versus believer. Where do I fall on that spectrum?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I'd say I'm probably full-blooded Scully.
So you would say most things you write off as...
There's always an explanation that you can find with science or explanation within our own universe. But
okay.
That being said, I'm ready to be proven wrong, and I'm kind of the outlier in my family. Most of them believe they've had their own experiences and think there's a little bit more behind the scenes going on. So I'm open to it, but I have yet to see anything for myself to put me on that Mulder trajectory, we'll call it.
Okay. So you've actually gone against the grain in your family by not believing.
Yeah. I'd say I'm the only one in the family kind of in that sitting on that side of the fence.
Okay. Okay.
How about you?
I would sum up my thoughts on this as I want to believe.
Yeah.
I actually have those words tattooed on my body.
Prove it.
And that's because I really want there to be something out there that exists. And I really want to experience this stuff. I'd love to get abducted by aliens someday.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
No, I respect that approach. And yeah, I think in my head, it just opens up a box of, okay, if it is out there, that's very interesting. But then is it going to be pleasant?
That's true. That's true. We don't always want to think about things that could be unpleasant or question our belief systems.
Yeah. And most of the movies and TV, et cetera, I've seen, they don't seem to be too fond of humans.
That's very true.
So if we do find it, I'm worried that will be the outcome.
That's very true. If aliens have visited Earth, they are technologically advanced.
But I mean, hey, if they're super chill, down to hang, I'm here for it.
Yeah. You can join us here in the pillow fort. I bring up Mulder and Scully specifically because today's file really feels like an episode of The X-Files.
Okay.
Granted, this story takes place in Zimbabwe, but, you know, the FBI is far-reaching.
Yeah.
But it has that feel to it.
So, knowing that, were you big into X-Files back in the day?
I never watched The X-Files during its original run. And then I would say probably about 5 years ago, I was like, you know, there's this show called The X-Files, and it's kind of exactly up your alley.
Yeah.
And so I turned it on, and it is now probably one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah, it's great.
It falls perfectly in line with my belief system about all of this stuff. I think they do a good job of towing that line. So today we're going to be talking about the Ariel School UFO incident.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of this?
No, I haven't heard anything about that whatsoever.
Okay, excellent. I'll say real quick, in researching this, it brought to mind, I think, a shared experience that we had that I'm going to classify as paranormal. And I'm going to run that by you. And we have not discussed this prior to this moment, have we?
Right after I was like, I've never had any of these experiences. You're like, well, I remember.
Well, I'm going to prove you wrong. And so do you remember we were probably 13, 14 years old. We were staying in a tent locked in the middle of suburbia. So this was not like out in the woods or something like that. Like it was just in a neighborhood. And
this was just like in my yard, I think, right?
Yeah, correct. And we were woken up by a very loud noise. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. Now that you're saying this, I do remember this happening.
I'm just curious. I want to test my own memory on this. Don't make it yet, but do you remember the noise?
Yeah, I remember. I don't know how to do it without just like embarrassingly imitating the sound.
Well, that's what we're about to do. That's what we're about to do. And so what I want to do, just to test my memory, and this could just go off the rails and just ruin my belief system completely, but on the count of three, I want us both to make the noise that we heard that night.
Okay.
Okay. Now, for everybody listening, this was a very loud noise. This was louder than a car driving by. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It was loud enough to wake us up. And so, are you ready?
Yeah. Do you want to do the count?
Yeah.
Okay. So, 3, 2, 1.
Three, two, one, make the sound.
Okay.
Got it?
Yeah.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Wah. I knew it.
Mine had a little more of a vibrato, in my memory at least.
You know, I just don't have that vocal range. Yeah, but right. Okay, so we had the same experience.
Yeah.
And we have not talked about that since the day it happened.
I remember us just like waking up to it and being like, what is that? And then I can't remember if it just faded out and stopped or if we got out to look for it. I feel like we must have gone outside at least. But I don't think we never figured out what it was, if I remember right.
I think we did go outside and there was nothing there.
Yeah.
But I think both of our initial reactions was a UFO just like went by the house.
Yeah. And I think this tent, we had wired up like a light to it. So I know when it was on, like it looked like this shining mini tent beacon. So maybe whatever it was saw it from above.
Maybe they thought it was an additional flying saucer in need.
Yeah. And it needed to come in and check out the situation. And then it was just you and me hanging out listening to a mixtape or something.
Yeah, and it flew up.
As everyone did at the 90s in their tents.
Well, good. I'm glad that my memory is not terrible.
Yes, I do remember that. It's been a little while, but yeah, I think the details you outlined are pretty much how I remember it.
Okay, good. And so with that being said, let's jump in here.
Okay.
So I'm going to take you to just outside Harare, Zimbabwe.
Okay.
That is the capital city of Zimbabwe.
Is there any location painting we need to do to get the scope of where we're at?
So where we're going to be at is an area called Rua. That's R-U-W-A.
Okay.
And it's about 14 miles southeast of Harare.
Okay.
It's an agricultural area, so a lot of farmers, not an urban area at all. And in Rua, there is the Ariel School. And the Ariel School is a private school. They teach ages 6 to 12. Not sure how the grade system translates to Zimbabwe, but the children involved today are ages 6 to 12. And it may or may not be worth noting, but these were affluent children.
Okay. So they're well off.
Yeah, they were well off. So it's an agricultural area. A lot of times you would think it's more impoverished, but this area actually was fairly affluent.
Okay.
And so that's the school that is going to be the main focus of today's story.
Is there any significance to Ariel? I'm hearing that right. It's A-E-R-I-A-L?
A-R-I-E-L.
Oh, okay. Is there any significance to that name?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
And so this whole incident starts on September 14th, 1994. And that's actually 2 days before the incident in question today.
Okay.
But we got to get a little background before we go to what actually happened on the 16th.
All right, lay it on me.
So on the 14th, in that area of Zimbabwe, there were numerous reports of UFOs and fireballs in the sky.
Okay.
A lot of people calling into radio stations. Some people called the police to report seeing UFOs or fireballs in the sky. Now, detractors from this story would say that it was the re-entry of the Zenit 2 rocket from the Cosmos 2290 satellite launch. That's a whole lot of fancy stuff to just say these were like some rocket boosters that fell off of a launch and were seen overhead.
So space junk coming back in the atmosphere, or it's far enough, it doesn't fall to the ground?
Yeah, so space junk, I would assume falling down to the ground, but far enough away that it looks like it's flying through the sky.
Okay.
So because that did happen, that actually did happen. The Zenit 2 rocket did break apart, or the parts that were supposed to, broke apart while this satellite was being launched. And so some of what was reported had to have been these rocket parts. And people started calling the ZBC radio reporting UFOs. And that's the main radio station out of Zimbabwe.
Okay.
However, people didn't just report there's a fireball streaking across the sky. Mm-hmm. Some people reported there were multiple objects. They were flying in patterns. There was actually a mother and a child that reported a UFO in the area earlier that day. And so that rocket breakup, and most of these reports happened at night, but mm-hmm. the day prior. And actually that day, 100 students at the Peterhouse School, which is 22 miles away, reported seeing a flying object low to the ground.
Okay.
And when that sighting was happening, all of the school and bus radios were disabled, seemingly spontaneously.
Okay.
So there are actually 2 days prior to the incident we're going to talk about today, there was a different school that saw an odd object flying through the sky. September 14th was a loaded day in mid-Zimbabwe for UFO sightings.
Gotcha.
And there was, in addition to just seeing crafts in the sky, there was a truck driver that night who reported seeing strange beings on the roadside.
Okay.
So we've got some sightings of UFOs. We have some sightings of strange beings, some sightings of satellite launches. All of this really to set the tone for Zimbabwe in mid-September of 1994.
Okay. All the hallmarks of a great alien visitation.
So there is buzz in the area about UFOs.
Yeah.
Aliens, spacecraft, all that is being talked about. Just in general.
Decently widespread, too, it sounds like. I mean, this is a fair number of people we're talking about.
Right. So there are people from all walks of society calling in, reporting this stuff.
Okay.
And so there was a bit of UFO fever going on in Zimbabwe. Now, 2 days later, this is the day of the event, and we're going to jump right into the event.
Okay.
So on September 16th of 1994, at the aerial school, it's mid-morning, about 10 a.m., and all of the students are out in the recess area, out playing in the yard of the school. Mm-hmm. This is about 250 students.
Okay.
From what I can tell, this wasn't like a staggered recess thing. They would just let all the kids out to go play for however long they were supposed to be out there playing.
Okay.
While all the students are out there playing, all the adult faculty at the school are inside having a meeting.
Okay.
So
just free reign.
Yeah. Children. These are free range children. Yeah. They're doing what they want, which for mid-90s, I don't think is that out of place. So these kids, they were free range. They were doing whatever they wanted. So about 10 a.m., the children report hearing a loud buzzing noise. And they're all sort of looking around, wondering what is this buzzing noise. They describe it as definitely not a car, definitely not a plane. It is its own distinct noise.
Okay.
A little bit later, a few minutes after that, they notice that there is an object hovering above the trees just outside of the schoolyard.
Okay.
And the only information they give about this object at this point is that it has flashing lights all around it.
It's interesting, too. I feel like these things usually happen in the dead of night. This is just like 10 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, 10 a.m. in the morning. They're coming down. They're ready to get their all-star special. they're landing in the schoolyard. So then once it lands, the kids describe a metallic saucer-shaped craft. And it ended up being about, I think it was 62 students. So it's 250 on the yard. 62 of them report seeing this object.
Okay.
I don't know what the other ones were doing. But
they're too into the soccer match to be pulled away for something so...
Yeah, I mean, those got kind of heated on the schoolyard in the mid-90s. So this object lands in a rocky field, probably about a football field away from the schoolyard. And so immediately, kids being kids, they run over to it and they get not far from it, 20, 30 feet away from it. And they report that seeing two figures standing outside of the craft.
Okay.
Now, they describe these figures as definitely not human, about 4 feet tall, dressed in all black. They also say they have large heads, no ears, and their eyes are really big and almond shaped, with a really small mouth and nose. Now, what does that sound like to you?
It sounds like an alien to me, David.
Sounds like an alien, right? sounds like the...
The trademark alien,
the
almost.
The trademark...
Except, they didn't say green skin. That's the part I was waiting for, but...
That's true.
The rest sounds pretty on brand for, if you said, draw an alien. I think this is the kind of the route I would go.
Yes. This is your prototypical alien.
Yeah.
That is... There are two of them standing outside of the craft. Now, some of the students said they saw some on top of the craft. Some of them said they saw 4 or 5 of them. There are varying reports on how many of these beings were around. Once the children ran over, the creatures, we'll call them, began to notice the children. And once they turned their gaze towards the children, then the children's fear response kicked in. And they thought, I need to get out of here.
Yeah.
And so a good number of them just ran back to the school at this point.
Right.
But some of them were left. Some of the older kids, they stayed brave. They stuck with it. And the kids that stuck with it reported some sort of body or mind control.
Interesting.
They said that they were given telepathic messages.
So talking to them just brainwave style.
Yeah, in their heads.
Yeah.
Messages in their heads. The kids, the body control piece, they said that it was as though they were moving without trying to.
So was it trying to bring them onto the ship or just keep them from running away so that they could have a dialogue? Or was it too much of an experience to really dial it into a specific purpose?
I don't know if we can get a specific purpose. I'd need to do a little more research on the thinking of aliens to really understand why the aliens wanted them to come closer.
The sound of it. Some of these kids were chosen almost or just more susceptible maybe to control. I guess that's up in the air.
It seemed like the ones that didn't run away.
Yeah.
So any of the ones that were left were kind of subject to this body mind control situation.
Gotcha.
And so these creatures sort of control these children to walk ever closer towards them. And some of them reported they got as close as you and I are right now, 5-6 feet from the beings.
Okay.
And they reported that when the beings were moving, it was as though they were running in slow motion.
Okay.
So it was not a normal human gait.
Gotcha.
So they get a little bit closer. The messages start coming through. And most of the messages are about needing to save the Earth. Images were put into their heads of the forest burning, seas boiling, just destruction of the earth. There was an important message conveyed to them that they needed to help save the earth.
So right now, those kids at State are like, I done messed up.
Yeah.
I should have ran when I had the chance.
So as they're doing this, and the children are sort of being drawn ever closer to the beings, and the beings are getting closer to them, the school bell rings. Time to go in from recess. This is enough to startle the creatures. Mm-hmm. And the children said when the school bell rang to go back in, the trance was broken.
The school bell is God when you're a child. So
absolutely.
Yeah, you gotta get,
even
you gotta
to aliens that have happened near
like,
the
you guys
school
gotta go, man. We're sorry. We came at a bad time.
Yeah, they're like, this trance doesn't work when that bell rings because
we'll be back.
I'm not being tardy.
Right.
And so after the bell rings, the trance ends, all the children sprint back into the school. Now, I don't know about you, but what's going through my head is with the prior incident 2 days before, this is some crew of aliens flying around and their ship is breaking down.
Okay. Yeah.
And their thought process is, well, we got to land. We got to repair this ship. Where can we land that like nobody's going to believe anybody? Let's go land next to those kids and like, you know, change the flux capacitor. And,
yeah.
Like, you know, nobody's going to believe them anyways.
Right.
So that's where my head's at right now. So the children run back into the school And how do you think the teachers and this adult faculty respond to this?
If it was me, I was many years ago a substitute teacher. If there was, let's say, 60 kids who came in and told me they saw this, I would be like, okay, somebody came up with a story, it started spreading around, and it just kind of got blown out of proportion. So maybe they even did see something, or maybe they just were kind of scheming to pull it over on the teachers, but something in that vein. I don't think they would be believed.
You're exactly right. So the children run in, they're screaming about this, visibly shaken up, and the teachers and adult faculty basically dismiss them.
Yeah.
But they're persistent. No, we saw something. Something happened out there.
Okay.
And so Colin Mackey, who I believe was the principal at the school, he asked the kids to draw pictures of what they saw and to write what they saw.
Okay.
So you can look these up online. I'll show you some here in just a second. You can get an idea of what the kids were drawing.
Okay.
But it doesn't really go past that. I'll show you the pictures. I'll also post them to our Instagram account for the episode's post. I'll put them on there too. Now, I think Colin Mackey was doing this sort of to just appease the children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, sure, of course, we know you saw something. Like, draw it.
Yeah, write that it down so we can move on.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on from this. This is a ridiculous story. The next day, because all these children, they go home, and what do they tell their parents? I was mind controlled by aliens in the schoolyard today.
The parents are like, what are they teaching at that school?
Yeah. And so the parents, they're obviously concerned. Like, yeah. what is going on at this expensive school that I'm sending my children to?
Yeah.
And so the next day, a lot of the parents actually come to the school. They come to the school and they confront the faculty about what's going on. And the faculty basically says exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. It was some sort of story. There's not a whole lot of substance here. You know, we kind of just dismissed it.
Yeah.
Now, some of the parents start reporting this to the ZBC radio. So the same radio station that stuff was reported to 2 days prior.
And so one of my questions was going to be, and it may not be something we can say for certain, but I would imagine given the events happening 2 days prior, people are probably a little more on edge about these kinds of stories.
Yes. Because
there's, like you're saying, a buzz in the area. So something else happening, I imagine parents who maybe would have brushed it off are now a little more invested in what's happening when they hear these stories.
Absolutely. So all these parents, the students probably also, they're all aware of all of these things that were going on a couple days before.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the adults definitely are a little more wary of what's going on with our kids at this school.
Yeah.
I think the parents are the ones that reported it to the ZBC radio. They start calling in, this stuff happened to my children at their school. And so it gets out there. The news starts to flow about this incident.
Yeah.
2 days later, a guy named Tim Leach, he hears about the story. He is BBC's Zimbabwe correspondent.
Okay.
Just a quick background on him. He is used to covering war zones. He covered war-torn areas in Angola, Rwanda, Nigeria. It was kind of his thing. He was a battle-hardened reporter.
Yeah.
There's reports that he saw some of his colleagues pass away in front of him just because of the nature of where he was having to report from.
So a trustworthy veteran of the industry coming in to report.
Yes, absolutely. So he comes in because he heard this story, and he's quoted as saying, I could handle war zones, but I couldn't handle this. And so the excitement over this event is boiling over at this point. And so he decides to sit down and film interviews with the students and the staff.
Okay.
So we had Colin Mackey, the principal, asked them to draw pictures,
yeah,
to write down the story of what they saw. And now we have Tim Leach filming interviews with the students and the faculty.
Yeah.
And eventually he gets to the point where he starts getting frustrated because the BBC will not pick up this story.
Mm-hmm.
So he calls his friend, well, I don't know if they were friends previously, but he calls in Cynthia Hind.
Okay.
Now, Cynthia Hind is Africa's MUFON coordinator. Now, do you know what MUFON is?
No, I don't. I couldn't even make a guess.
So MUFON stands for the Mutual UFO Network.
Okay.
So this is an international organization that is dedicated towards proving and disproving UFO sightings.
Okay.
So they come in, if there's ever a major UFO event, they come in, they get testimonials, they do research on airplanes, other aircraft in the area, satellites, And they actually try to disprove as many of these events as they can.
This reminds me of like the Catholic Church, I think, has something similar for like miraculous events. They'll send people to kind of like scientifically examine it and then decide whether or not it's a true miracle or not. So it sounds like a kind of a similar.
Yeah. Like when somebody finds like a chicken nugget that looks like Jesus.
Somebody's got to go in there and dip it in some honey mustard to see if it's the real deal.
Exactly. Right. Right. They flip it in the air, lands honey mustard up. It's the real thing.
It's Jesus.
Exactly. Right. So MUFON actually is very successful at what they do.
Okay.
They have a 95% success rate in disputing claims.
Meaning that they disprove the claim?
Right. So they disprove about 95% of the claims that come their way.
And the other 5%, I'm assuming they don't say, yes, that was an alien ship. They just weren't able to disprove it.
Exactly.
Okay.
This definitely was not an airplane. It was not a satellite. It was not some other normal occurring thing. And so MUFON is not like a group of people in a basement wearing tinfoil hats.
Not conspiracy theorists. These are like the people trying to use science to explain something.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Okay.
And so Tim Leach is there, the reporter. Cynthia Hind comes in. She's with MUFON. She also interviews the children, and she asks them again to draw a picture of what they saw.
Mm-hmm. And you just sent me these photos, so I'm kind of looking at them now. Is there anything that's... I should pay particular notice to?
Just give me your general opinion on the pictures. Because they were all asked to draw pictures of the same event.
I saw the map of kind of showing where it landed.
Okay.
So now I see these are the photos that the kids all drew. And I guess it doesn't really matter if it was for the principal or when they did the follow-up. Like, were the images different between
Not
drawing
significantly.
Sessions? But yeah, there does seem to be a pretty good overlap.
Right, there's some variation.
Yeah, but the overarching imagery is pretty in line.
Some people, I feel like, get caught up on numbers of windows, numbers of lights, what the landing gear looks like. Some people who just immediately are out to discredit this stuff will point out any minute change in the picture.
And I think it's worth pointing out also, like, I mean, even first-hand testimony in court cases, like say there was a getaway car, the information is very unreliable that is given from witnesses. But I mean, obviously there was a getaway car, so that was there. Just like the finer details kind of get lost in the moment when you're, you know,
exactly,
kind of excitable or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. And you would imagine that if you were in a schoolyard in a trance by an alien,
yeah,
some of the finer details, they're gonna get sifted out.
Yeah, six windows, seven windows, I don't know. There's a guy making me walk, run in slow motion.
Right, correct, right. Yeah. We're not focusing on number of windows. This is not the Titanic insurance fraud conspiracy, which right, we'll get into in a later episode. So they draw these pictures of what they saw.
Okay.
As I said, Tim Leach, the BBC correspondent, he cannot get anyone at the BBC to pick this story up. Cynthia Hind is trying to help him get this story picked up. She's trying to get this information out into the world, right? Because if you're a UFO researcher and you have 62 people reporting seeing not just a craft landing, but beings coming out of it,
yeah,
that is the kind of story you want traction on.
Yeah.
And so both of them get together and they call Dr. John Mack.
Okay.
Dr. John Mack, he is the head of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School at the time.
Okay.
Specifically child psychiatry is what he practiced.
Okay.
They call him and they're basically like, look, we need an authority that can come out here and like verify what these kids are saying is accurate.
Yeah.
Because without that, everybody's just going to continue to think these children are just telling stories.
Yeah.
And these pictures are just made up drawings and all that.
So he's the guy coming in basically to validate that these kids aren't spinning a story, like what they believe is genuine.
Right. And so the thinking with Cynthia and Tim is if we can get a respected doctor to come out, interview these children, and he can verify, okay, what they're saying is true, then that adds to some validity to the story, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, what would his process be for that?
So he comes out, he interviews the children, some individually, some in groups. All of these videos of his interviews were at one point readily available online. Mm-hmm. And then I think someone bought the rights to them or something happened and they all got removed from the internet.
Okay.
So you can probably find some clips of them, but I could not find any of these interviews in their entirety. So he interviews the children, mm-hmm. and it later comes out that this is when the children start talking about mind control.
Okay.
Prior to John Mack's interviews, none of the children had reported mind control, body control,
okay.
any of these messages of environmentalism, mm-hmm. or anything of that nature. They absolutely reported seeing a craft, seeing beings come out, getting fairly close to these beings, but all of the messaging and control over them mm-hmm. came out during these interviews with John Mack.
And just for making sure I'm keeping my timeline in order. So those things happened when they saw the beings. These weren't like days later they started having these like visions and mind control things. This all happened in that one experience.
That is what they reported when John Mack was interviewing them.
Okay.
So he interviews them. He gets all this information. He concludes they are 100% telling the truth.
Yeah.
He says that he believes them. He agrees with Cynthia Hind, who also believes them. And that's when this story gets out of Zimbabwe.
Okay.
Is after John Mack shows up and interviews these children. This is why we know this story today.
Okay.
Because Dr. John Mack showed up and verified these claims.
Okay.
Now, a few things about Dr. John Mack. He was a big environmentalist. Mm-hmm. He was big into that. He also had, prior to this event, done a 10-year study on people who claim to have had extraterrestrial experiences.
Okay.
So this was not calling in a third party that's non-biased.
Yeah.
He had experience interviewing people who had experiences like these in the past.
Do you know, or was he outspoken about whether or not he believed in aliens and paranormal activity and things like that, or was it just a field of research to him?
To my knowledge, it was just a field of research to him. Mm-hmm. He was very interested in the ET phenomena.
Yeah.
And so he interviewed quite a few people, you know, a 10-year study. That's quite an undertaking.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
To do that. I don't know if he ever revealed, you know, I like aliens, but
I feel like you would have to, right?
You, that you feel, yeah, you yeah. feel like he you wants... kind of have to. So after he concludes that this was happening, Harvard gets involved, mm-hmm. and they're like, well, hold on a minute.
I don't pay that guy.
Yeah, we pay that guy.
I don't, what's he out here saying?
I don't know if we want somebody who's doing this type of work representing the school abroad.
Yeah.
And so they investigate him for 14 months. And he, I think, the only ever investigation into a tenured professor at Harvard, despite no misconduct.
Hmm. Only based on, they're investigating his claim or him as a...
They're just a little upset that they're, one of their prominent professors is talking about aliens.
Like, yeah, he's out there telling ghost stories or whatever. They're not too wild about that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Like we're Harvard. We don't want any nonsense in here. Right.
Gotcha.
And so they do a 14-month investigation into him and they ultimately find no wrongdoing. Mm-hmm. And the dean of Harvard comes out with his statement. He has the right to be wrong.
Okay.
So I think this was one of those he's tenured. We can't just fire him easily type of situation.
We don't want to deal with a lawsuit. So
exactly. So after all of that, Dr. John Mack actually becomes more well-known.
Okay, because he got some exposure from the investigation and the story.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so he ends up making TV appearances on shows like Larry King Live, Oprah. He's going on some of the heavy hitters on the TV.
Is he talking about the event, or he's just kind of there to be the alien expert?
Yeah, so kind of both. So he's... Some of them, he's talking about this specific incident. Mm-hmm. Others, he's just more talking about extraterrestrial experiencers in general.
He's like the field expert guy.
Yeah, he's the guy you call in when you need to know about alien encounters.
Okay.
It's also worth noting that prior to this, he was a Pulitzer Prize winning professor. This is kind of towing the line of zany professor that loves aliens mm-hmm. and very serious professor that is doing serious work, right? We're somewhere in between, as most professors are, but his topic happens to be aliens. Now, unfortunately, because this happened in 1994, we can't talk to Dr. John Mack anymore. In 2004, so just 10 years after this, he was in London giving a lecture. And on September 27th, he was walking home from a lecture and he was struck and killed by a drunk driver. And so, unfortunately, we're not able to garner any more information about this case from him anymore. Now, if you really want to go down the conspiracy rabbit hole,
which of course I do,
of course, on September 27th, 2004, he was one of four John Macks killed in England on the same day.
Now, that seems very unlikely.
Right. Four people, same name, same city, all killed.
Yeah.
Not natural causes.
Yeah.
But they all, you know, he was struck by a drunk driver. I'm not sure how the other three passed away.
Yeah, I was curious how the other guys went down.
But that is a very curious detail. It's also worth noting that his family did not press any charges against the drunk driver that killed him. And so, if we're going all the way down that rabbit hole, I think the Men in Black got him.
Yeah. Whether they were drinking or not, I don't know, but they are probably responsible.
Well, I think the Men in Black probably were drinking that day, and then eventually they were just like, anybody named John Mack.
Let's get rid of them all.
Just, we're not taking any chances.
I want a blank slate on John Macks going forward.
There were no John Macks left in London after September of 2004. And so that really kind of sums up this case.
Okay.
And so, you know, we don't have as many theories as we normally would for a case. It's really kind of, do you believe the kids or not?
Yeah.
And so where do you stand on that?
You know, it's interesting. It makes me feel like I need to like research all these people involved. It like go down like a really ultra deep rabbit hole. But I guess what was MUFON? Is that how they pronounce that?
Yeah, MUFON.
Okay, so basically they reached a point where they're like, there's nowhere else for us to go with this case. We can't say what it was definitively. How do you feel about John Mack's credibility? Like, I know he's Harvard, and you said he had a Pulitzer, so clearly he is at least a smart person. Do you feel like he is a credible source to verify the kid's claims?
I think that he's a credible source to verify the claims to a point. I think that unconsciously his own biases may have driven some of the conversation with the children.
Yeah, he may have been really excited, like, yeah, and then wasn't there four guys on the roof?
There were seven windows, remember?
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think it's good that you point out, you're like, so not exactly an unbiased third party, like, you almost should have gotten the straight-blooded child psych person in there versus somebody who's like, oh, and also I love aliens.
Yeah, I did a 10-year study on aliens.
I'll go talk to all of them. I'm going to draw pictures. Yeah, and it's always tough because I know with times that I was a kid, you know, there will be some story that does start off with like some speck of truth or even a little bit of truth or a lot of truth, but by the time it gets kids excited, like the story starts getting bigger and bigger when they see the reaction they get. Like, I know I've got like a million nieces and nephews, and if they start telling a story and see everybody dial in, like, they'll start bringing up all kinds of random details that I'm pretty sure never happened, but they have the room, right? They've got the attention, so they're like, they will take it and run with it whatever direction. But I mean, it's just, for that many people to have that many sightings over that week, you know, it's one of those things where I would just like love to teleport to that time and place to really just like see it for myself, because I think that's the only way I'll ever know. And, you know, maybe that's why you and me are both just like waiting for that thing to happen to us, so we can be like, okay, now I've seen it firsthand. I understand what this experience is like. It's so hard to put yourself in that place without, you know, having it happen to you directly.
Can you imagine going back to Rua, Zimbabwe, 1994, and you're like, I'm going to see some stuff right now. I'm about to see a UFO. And then you teleport there. You're on the schoolyard. It's like 9:59. You're like, it's about to happen.
Wait, come on, come on, come on.
And then you hear and look over, and there's just like a metallic trash truck picking up like a big dumpster, trying to get it in the back. It breaks. The guys get out. They're in their, you know, black uniforms, and they're like, so much trash on this earth. Why is there so much trash out here? We need to clean this place up.
Yeah.
And then they drive off.
And then little Brad in the corner's like, did you guys see that?
That was an alien.
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's better to live in lore versus seeing the real thing that kind of be a letdown. But, I mean, it's still a super cool story, and seeing the drawings and stuff like that I think help a lot, so definitely look at those. I think things like that are super cool, where you can, like, separate out people who've seen stuff and just kind of see their take on it, like, where the overlap kind of is. Yeah, so I guess I side with Mufon on this one, like... But, you know, I can't say for sure what happens, so I guess there's always still a chance.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. I think 62 people, granted they were kids, seeing something at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, you said you have a good number of nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
If you were to tell them a story, what is the likelihood they would all come back days later and tell you the same story?
So you think there was some kind of event, garbage truck or otherwise, but it sounds like you think there was a thing, and then they all experienced that, but the story kind of evolved out a bit just because that's the nature of...
Of children.
Eyewitness testimony, and children especially. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think... I don't think the mind control, the body control, that is a little bit of a step too far for me.
And that was when Mackie Boy came in and may have gotten a little hype on
when the Dr. Kool-Aid. John Mack came in just like chugging Celsius.
He was amped up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember your legs started moving.
Yeah. Yes. They were running in slow motion. Yeah. You know, I think unfortunately his reputation precedes him in this case.
Yeah.
And so I have to unfortunately throw out quite a bit of the testimony that was given to him. But even before he got involved, these children had drawn pictures, written stories, told multiple people.
Well, that's where I was going in my head too. Like, okay, so sure, maybe you can kind of write off John Mack as just like an alien fanboy, but like before him, this guy Tim Leach at BBC, right, was the War Zone reporter. I mean, he was trying to get this story seen by more people, right? So it would be an interesting one for him to like throw his weight behind if he didn't see some validity to their claims.
Yeah. Given his history of reporting, he had to have heard or seen something that was like, this is legit.
Yeah.
We got to get this story out there.
Yeah.
And so I think something was near the schoolyard that day that was not there later when the adults went out there.
Yep.
And the children ran in screaming. It scared them in some way. Whether that was, like I said, a trash truck. I don't even think that makes sense with the spacing of the school.
There's beeping in windows. Close enough.
Yeah. Or a full-blown UFO with some alien mechanics trying to get this thing working again. The truth is somewhere in between there.
Yeah.
And like you said, unless we build a time machine and go back, we're never going to know what those kids saw that day.
I think the ultimate takeaway for today is we got to get rid of school bells because they ruin too much.
But they also knock you out of trances.
Okay, so maybe we keep them around.
Yeah, we need to use them strategically.
Yeah.
Keep one on your person at all times in case of...
You start feeling entranced.
Abduction.
Yeah. All right, well, is there anything else you think worth pointing out from this one, or should we wrap this thing up?
You know, I think that's about it. You want to go ahead with the wrap-up?
Yeah, so like always, you can follow us on Instagram at Oddity Archive Podcast. There will be a little post for this story, so make sure to throw your own personal theory down there. We love to read those. You can reach us at oddityarchivepodcast@gmail.com as well. So drop us a line there. Let us know if you have any topics you'd like us to cover or any just kind of personal strange events that happened to you. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, I will be personally reading and responding to every single email we get.
And you can hold them legally to that statement.
School bell.
But don't.
I am David Stuhldreher, creator and host. The show is edited by my co-host, Evan Miller. All original music created by Sean Bullock. You can follow him at Sean Bullock Video on Instagram. All original artwork done by Tanis. Follow her at Tanis Tattoos on Instagram as well. Thank you for listening.